This RFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Greetings once again. We're coming to you on Arrow Radio FM from here in the Wairarapa, New Zealand. And our hosts are both Anna Marie Kingsley and Margie Crawford. And we're talking about Beyond Panic. Now, in our first one, we sort of mentioned a whole lot of the type of things that can happen to one, which were mainly nature.
Well, you've got natural disasters, natural. You've got man-made.
And man-made. So we're trying to separate the two, because if we go into man-made, we will get very angry.
we're not supposed to be
believing. We're not supposed to be going to give you good ideas. Yes. But let's talk about earthquakes, because we started to talk about liquefaction, and that New Zealand is prone to it is vulnerable to earthquakes. We've got a lot of fault lines.
Yep, we are.
The Pacific Ring?
Yes, we've got four fault lines running through our property.
Through your property?
Through our property, yep.
How did you find that out?
Because I went to ask the council for permission to put up a geodome the other day, and they said, absolutely. We'll just go and have a look at our regional management fault line thing just to see if there's any issues here. And they come back and they go, looking a bit ill. And they said, you've actually got four major fault lines going through your property. So
that must have been cheery.
Well, no, it was quite good, because the spot that I wanted to put the geodome was exactly in this little triangle that didn't have a big fault line. So the regional council, regional councils in New Zealand have got very, very proactive, which is great, about identifying all the different potential fault lines that you have in New Zealand. So when you go to put a building on your land now, they go, we're just going to check you haven't got a flaming great fault line underneath you where you're trying to do this. And then they have quite an area on either side of what they call like a red zone-y type thing where you can't build either. And if you want to do that, you can have a building within that area. I think you need to apply to the regional council, and then they come in with a whole heap of mitigation things. I didn't go down that road, but I assume that to do that particular process is a bit more complicated than putting it where. But the thing is, with fault lines, they can appear out of nowhere.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Earlier on, you talked about that we don't know where everything is.
No,
we do know where the major ones are.
Yes, well, there's a huge one going right down the Southern Alps in the South Island.
Yes, and then there's a lot of that, I remember that from our geography.
Yes, yes, that's right, yeah. So we have a lot of earthquakes in New Zealand. I mean, you can go on a website called GeoNet, and that gives you very up-to-date. And then you look at them and you go, wow, that's a lot of movement.
Yes.
And I always think those little ones are really good, because they're kind of releasing pressure. You want them something to go rather than bang.
Right.
It's the big build-up of pressure, and then that big bang at once, that's what causes the major earthquake. But there are so many different types of earthquake, and they're measured in really weird ways, and it's a very... Physicists do this, you know, these sort of geologists and the earthquake scientists, and they... When we have that sort of... When you get that number, it's a 6.9 on the Richter scale, and that scale is worked out in an incredibly complicated mathematical formulation that they do, and it's a little bit beyond us. We don't really understand. Yeah.
So just going back to that figure, you know, you get that when you go onto the geo thing, but it's usually above a 6 that causes the damage. The ones below that, the 2s and the 3s, you'll feel it as a shake.
The 2s are very, very minor.
Yeah.
The 3s you may or may not notice.
Like
depending on how it goes, your lights, your hanging lights, sometimes they roll.
Swing or...
Yeah, the 4s.
But you're not likely to lose your pictures, you know, on the wall.
No. When you start getting up to the 5s, and then again, it also depends on the depth as well. As I said, this is a complicated mathematical formula, and it depends on the power of the earthquake. There's so many different types you can get. You can get a sheer earthquake, where the deformation ones.
Where it just drops.
Whether it drops or rises up. This is what happened in Kaikoura. They had a 6 metre deformation?
Yes, I know. They had this amazing amount of land movement.
Yep.
You know, like on a farm where it just dropped a whole piece.
Yes,
and you suddenly,
that's right.
your paddock has got a step in it.
Yeah, the seabed came up in some parts.
The seabed came up.
Yeah, they had to redo the whole railway line that went down that coast.
Yeah.
That took a long, long time. That settlement was shut off for quite a while.
Yes.
People had to be taken out on a big navy boat.
Wow.
They were very lucky at the time. They had a... big sort of international exercise with the Navy up in Auckland.
Okay.
So all of a sudden there were a whole heap of Navy boats and helicopters available
to come out.
And aircraft and things to actually evacuate people. We had a young woofer from Germany who was down there at the time, France, sorry, who was down there at the time. And he was woken up at just past midnight, and there was just him and a chap from Germany in the same little hostel room. And he said he thought he was dying. He had absolutely no idea what had happened. And they rushed out. Everybody else was standing on the street. There were all these international people who had absolutely no idea what had gone on, because they'd never experienced an earthquake.
Yeah.
They thought this was the end of the world. And they all rushed off to the hospital, because that's the only place they could actually get internet for their phones quite a while ago. They was in front of A&E at the Kaikoura Hospital. And they said, we still didn't know what had happened. And every now and then, a charge nurse from A&E would come out and shout at them to go away. Walking the bay. So they're all standing around there kind of comforting each other and crying and getting upset. And then texts started coming through from their parents overseas.
Oh, it picked it up that there'd been an earthquake.
This is what it was, because it came through from his parents. They said, are you okay? Because this is midday over there.
Yeah.
Are you okay? We know there's been an enormous earthquake in New Zealand. Where are you? And he said, I'm in the middle of it. And then came a lot of aftershocks after that.
Yes.
Yeah,
which is what we also mentioned, that the main one is only the beginning of a whole lot of other things as the earth settles again down.
Yes. So I texted him. I said, are you okay? Because he was coming back to us. He'd been with us while gone away and then decided to come back. And I said, are you okay? He said, no, I'm not.
Shame.
Very upset.
So it's very frightening.
It is, but there was an upside to this because it took a wee while to evacuate people. They were taking out women and pregnant children.
Yeah.
Pregnant women and children first.
Yeah.
And sick people. And so they were done by helicopters. And then these big boats were coming, big Navy boats were coming to take away a lot of people. And because Kaikoura produces an awful lot of crayfish down there, they couldn't get them out, the crayfish. So the marae, this is why marae is incredibly useful.
We must talk about that, aren't you?
And the community centres opened up their doors, and the crayfishermen had these huge, big chilled units of crayfish that they couldn't get out. So they donated all this stuff to the community centres.
Oh, I wouldn't have mind going to that,
So they had a lovely time having all of this crayfish and so Alex, after a while, he started to enjoy it a bit. And then they stuffed him on a Navy ship and then took him back to Christchurch. They didn't take him anywhere useful. Took him all the way back to Christchurch. Yeah. So then he had to spend another week
getting back. Yes.
But that was a difficult earthquake.
Okay, so what you've actually identified is that immediate thing afterwards is, what do you do? And it sounded like the best thing to do is go to a safe place. Now, that's where emergency in each town has a certain centres you should run to. Well, not that we all know where they are.
Well, and also not necessarily do you need to. So with a big earthquake, your main things are going to be, is your house still livable? If you can still stay in your house, then do. Because what you're doing by going and lurking in a centre somewhere, as you're bogging it up, that other people who need it can't get it.
Okay, so it's a
If your house is still livable and you haven't got a medical condition or you haven't been injured, obviously if that happens, then go and get help. But if you are perfectly capable of staying in your house and it's got a roof overhead and everything's okay, then stay there. But so what you're going to do is the first thing it's going to do is that usually your power goes out.
Yes.
Because there's big issues with power lines and transformers and things. Secondly, don't flush the toilet. This happened in Kaikoura. The toilets could still flush, but
there's nowhere to go with it.
Because of the land deformation, a lot of the sewer lines were now hanging out in midair into your neighbours. And when you flush the toilet, it went noink straight into the garden. So don't flush your toilet. You need to make a composting toilet, and I'll talk about that in a moment. And then water. If you're living in a town, then your water supply often goes as well, because the water pipes break.
Yeah.
So then they just shut that off at the source, because you can't have, that causes massive issues as well. So your big things are power, toileting, and water.
Yeah, and water.
Those are your major things. You've got enough food in your pantry. So to get around the power issue, with the power thing, you're going to run out of lights at night. Go to bed. Just go to bed. If it's dark, go to bed. Just wake up when it's light. That's the easy thing. One of the big things about these crises, don't try and live normally. think really carefully about how things are going to change.
This well, that's what we're going to keep going through all the way through our discussion through. Simple things one can do.
That's right, yes.
Like all those solar lights you've got going down your driveway.
Well, that's useful. That's
just handy. Pick them up and bring them inside at night.
You can. I hadn't thought of that. Well, that's a good idea.
Well, you see, some of us have been doing lots of reading or watching YouTube ideas.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
But really, I thought that was a very clever idea.
That's a really good idea.
You know, because I have a thing about, you know, everyone says, oh, candles. Candles can also be dangerous.
They're extremely dangerous. You know? I don't like candles.
You know, we'll talk on a separate thing of what you can do with candles, because there's another thing you can do. Anyway, to get back to, so now your first thing is, don't clog up the emergency
services.
Although you've got to probably let people know you're okay. That's the other thing.
Yes, well, texting. Don't phone, text.
Yeah, text. And sometimes that, And the other thing is to have a little radio to keep yourself up to date with what's going on. If you can have a little portable radio you know, because your TV's not going to work, your Wi-Fi's not going to work.
No.
You need something that you can have communication. Yes. Not this. I know we won't do it. We'll do a whole program on preppers, which is the American people who at the end of the world, how they're going to survive. We're surviving in New Zealand at earthquakes. But the other thing that happens in an earthquake, which you can segue into, is the sea.
And tsunamis.
Mm. Now, I lived down in Wellington for a long time, and in Island Bay, I don't know, it must have been after some tsunami. They drew coloured lines across the main road, which gave you an indication where were the... So if you saw a red one, you better run. Yeah. And, then it would be orange, and then it would... Yeah, and eventually, it was up on the hill. Mm. It was, I think, green or blue or something like that.
That's right.
So that you need to remember which are your safer points. Mm. Don't go down to the beach to see what's going on. I mean, I find that bizarre. You know, the people will go and see, oh, can we see the wave coming?
I know.
Yes.
You know. Yes, you can also see it on TV later if you want to.
Yeah.
It is. When my parents have got a batch up at Ekitio, which is on the east coast, right next to that Hikurini Trench zone. And so they often have tsunami. I think about once every 2 years they have a big tsunami warning. Usually in the middle of the night for some bizarre reason. They have, every house up there has a protocol on their wall, on their fridge usually. So when guests come in, there's a little earthquake drill. Well, not a drill, but a warning. And the big thing is that if you have an earthquake that is strong enough to knock you off your feet or it's very long, get gone is what they're, if it's strong and long, get gone is what is their little thingy. So when we park our cars, you have to take your caravan or your trailer off and then you have to park it so that it's facing outwards.
So you can get into it and get away.
And then you have a little grab bag. And in your grab bag is a little bar of chocolate and a pillow, and or you grab your pillow and a blankie, and all the comforts of home, some tissues and some, you know, all sorts of bits and pieces and snacks and things, because sometimes you can be away for 7 hours
in
your little car. So my parents live right down the end of a very long road to get back, like the Esplanade, to get back up to, so that you can then get higher on the hill. Yes. And whenever they have an earthquake tsunami drill that comes through, and the volunteer fire brigade come rushing down the thing with a loudspeaker and alarms go off and the sirens and bits and pieces. Everybody leaps into their cars, and then afterwards when they do the debrief, there's quite a bit of terse commentary from the people who are managing these things saying you must take your trailer and your boat off your car.
Otherwise you block it.
And they said, and you must don't go up to the tsunami line and stop and then start to watch out over the horizon. You have to keep going because you've got another 100 cars coming behind you.
Yeah. I think what you're mentioning all the time is think of other people.
Think of other people.
You know, it's not you alone.
Yeah.
Which I find very interesting because when we get onto the preppers, it's me by myself. No, we're part of a community.
That's right.
And the other thing you've mentioned there, which I'll sort of go back to, is that our phones have these warnings on them.
Yes.
And we have practice runs. This is, remember people, we're in New Zealand, we're very organised here because we know these things might come.
But we're not that good at it. I mean, these people have a drill alert that really is a real alert. They've had it coming from wherever. I think the Tonga one was one when they had that big volcano that went up. They had one just recently as well. That big Hikarangi Trench is massive. I mean, those waves, when they come in, they're predicting, depending on how it collapses, they could be 20 metres high.
Yeah.
And that's huge. That takes out the whole community.
That's so like that awful one in, was it Christmas or New Year up in
Indonesia.
Indonesia.
Yeah, that was horrendous.
And that was horrendous. And that's a reality. So we've got to remember and learn.
And we don't.
From these things.
We're not good at learning.
Don't go look at things.
Don't rush off to the supermarket to buy toilet paper.
I have a whole store from the last time.
Oh, dear.
I mustn't say that. So, I mean, so earthquakes, because we are prone to it. So any country that is prone to a specific type of natural crisis needs to think through how do you handle those first. Yes. And they usually say 72 hours.
Mm.
How do you deal with that?
That's right.
Now, the other thing you did mention, and I want to stress it here, is the part the marais play. Now, for non-New Zealanders, the marais is a meeting place for the Maori.
Mm.
And they usually have a big kitchen.
Yes.
And they usually have mattresses.
Yes.
So I have slept over in a marae. You've got to get used to everyone snoring, but that's because I'm a good old westernised, person. But the fact is that they become often the help centre.
They do, but we also need to remember that these are people who have their own families. This happened in Kaikoura, and it was quite difficult to evacuate some people. Some of those holiday makers, they had 1,200, I think it was 1,200 tourists, mostly young people, who kind of set up Party Central in the park, because it was coming up to summer. And when the defence minister went down to Kaikoura and he went to the Marais, he said, okay, what do you people need? We need people to go.
We're overwhelmed.
We have been cooking for 3 days now.
Yeah.
And they're not leaving. And
they had made a new home.
The liquor store had opened. They were now buying. They were getting fed for free, accommodation for free.
Yeah.
And they were just having a lovely, lovely time. And it was, and so they had to bring in an evacuation order to get rid of people. So to me, that the marae and the community centres are for people who absolutely need it. Yeah. This goes back to my point of, if you can stay home.
Yes. If your house is still livable.
That's exactly right. People panic because they haven't got power and they haven't got a toilet and they haven't got water.
Yeah.
But with a little bit of thought, you can mitigate the...
That word again.
What's that, sorry? The big M word, yes. with a little bit of thought, you can mitigate the impact on those centres that are desperately trying to provide help for people who need it.
Yeah.
It's like the fire station has, most volunteer fire brigades have emergency backup generators and they have plugs for people who are on oxygen machines.
Oh, okay.
So there's things that... But don't bog up those centres if you don't need to.
Yes.
They are for emergency people. They are for people whose house has literally crumbled around them.
Yeah.
Or there's a flaming great hole in their roof or whatever. Yeah. Or they've got lots of little children or something. So if you want to stay in place, and if you can, then absolutely do, there's things that you can do. So you can have a little tiny battery. You know those battery power banks that we use for our phones?
Yes.
Now, they're not that expensive. If you can afford one, then get one. Keep it plugged in. Keep it charged.
Yeah.
So that you can plug your phone in, because our phones now, they've got so many apps on them, they lose power over a day. So, and then you can charge your solar lights from those as well. Yeah. Your plug-inable head torches.
Yes.
All that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And
a lot of those banks also have a solar side to them now.
Yes, they do.
When we talk about this sort of thing in more detail, I'll tell you how many gadgets I've been able to find.
Oh, well,
I love it.
Oh, you're a gadget lady. Yeah,
I love it,
And they're useful. I mean, the little tiny fold-out solar panels you can get for charging your phone.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And
recharge. So there's a whole lot of stuff. But this, okay, so you've brought up, all right, although we have these centres where you can gather, think of other people.
Yes.
Don't clog up the system.
No. No.
But the system is there.
Yes,
and that's right. And then related to that is think of who else is in your neighbourhood.
That's right, yeah.
So if there is an old lady down the road who you haven't, who can't get out, actually, or is in a wheelchair or something, think of her.
Yep.
Go and check, maybe wheel her to, or take her down to the centre,
yep.
But you don't have to stay.
No.
If you are walking and you've got your backup systems, do not stay. And I think the council usually has a list of these gather points and so on. Yeah, but you've mentioned like the fire station has certain things.
Yep.
So make yourself aware of this. A lot of it is online.
It is. If you really need things like that, then yes, do make yourself aware. So one of the other really important things is the last two are that we've covered power, toilets and water. So water, remember how they had that thing, well, you might not have been here, but years and years ago, they were talking about how to prepare for an earthquake, have everything tied back to the wall, make sure your paintings are organised, your TV, you look at your TV.
I know my down, TV, I well? Learned that, it's all strapped. Yes. My visitors from overseas all think I'm crazy. I said, wait until you see an earth tremor even coming through and what your TV does. Yeah. Because these are not the old-fashioned clunky things that, if they did fall, you would break a hole in the floor.
Yes, that's right.
But it's things like...
Big bookcases, make sure...
Bookcases.
Your hot water cylinder. Make sure your hot water cylinder... Now, I think this is part of the code of compliance. Your hot water cylinder has to be attached.
Yeah.
Now, one of the reasons for that, not only so it doesn't fall over and squash things, also so that it's a water source where you don't... Your hot water cylinder has a lot of water in it.
Yes.
And you can cool that down if it's warm. And you can also get... Where else can you get water from? We have water in bottles, in 5-litre bottles, 5-litre containers that we put in our freezer. We've got big chest freezer, and we put water in that, not only because it's more efficient, because a full freezer is more efficient than a half-empty freezer, but also we use it in a big chilli bin when we go away in a caravan.
Yes.
And we pop these big frozen water bottles into the chilli bin, and then you can put your frozen things in. They will stay frozen in there for 4 or 5 days easily.
Yeah.
You can do the same thing, because when your power goes out, you suddenly have a lot of stuff in your fridge that is not going to be safe in a while. So you need to eat differently as well.
Yeah.
You don't have to have cereal with your milk every morning.
No.
If you're a toast or jam person,
stuff that's going to go off.
You can have ham.
Yeah.
You can have ham, and you can follow it with a couple of spoonfuls of sour cream to get rid of those very perishable things, and then save the stuff that's going to last till later.
Yes. Now, in a previous program, I hope everyone's been listening for years, I did one on when the lights go out, and it was basically about South Africa who was having all these power outages. And one of the things that my sister was doing was, freezing the bottles of water in the freezer and then putting them in the fridge.
Yes.
And it keeps your fridge cooler.
Yep.
I have also been investigating how to make an old-fashioned cool box outside.
Okay. Yep.
That's why we end up with these arguments at night about I'm a Cassandra, you see. No, don't listen to me. Anyway, we won't go on about that. But yes, so we must spend more in a program going in detail about some of this stuff.
Yeah.
But so, so...
Well, the last thing is toilets. Last thing is...
Oh, yes, is your loo.
So a lot of advice out there where you get a plastic bag and you pop that in the inside of your toilet. And then if you're not careful, you're going to end up with a lot of plastic bags and some highly biohazardous waste here. So their idea, I think, is that you get a bucket, okay, and you can unscrew the toilet lid off your toilet and pop that on top of your toilet. And if you put something at the bottom... We have a composting toilet at home, so we know that this works extremely well. This is a very easy one. This is out in our little outhouse in the garden for garden visitors and things. And we put sawdust. We put pine sawdust at the bottom of that. And then every time somebody does a little doo-doo, you just put a little scoop of sawdust over the top. There's no smell.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's safe. You can use toilet paper. Don't put nappy wipes in there because often they're made out of a synthetic plastic. And then when that's getting up to full, you just go and dig a hole in your garden and you bury it.
That's right.
Easy peasy. Now,
and if you don't, you can use wood ash.
You can use wood ash. Yeah. You can use soil out of your garden as well, just something to cover, just to stop the flies and to stop the mess.
Yeah.
If you won't, you probably won't have water to wash your hands with, so make sure you've got a supply of hand sanitizer. We all had that left over from COVID.
Yep.
Just go and get another bottle.
Yeah.
And just have it with a little thingy and have that set up beside your composting toilet. It's easy as. It's really simple. It's a way that means that you can stay in your home for longer.
Yeah.
And if you have a toilet seat on, it's a lot more comfortable than perching on the rim.
Yeah, I know. I'm always scared the whole thing would break. I probably use it. You could make your own.
You can absolutely make
it. Very
your own.
Simple.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have covered some of the things. There's basically we've doing the crisis.
Yes.
The first 72 hour things.
Also, the other thing is you don't need to have this at the bottom of your garden. You can have this set up in your bathroom.
Yes.
People think they need to go down to the bottom of the garden in the rain with this thing. But no, make a composting toilet in your actual bathroom.
Yeah.
Have it set up beside you. It's not hard.
Yeah.
It's a really easy thing. And it just means that you can stay in your house for longer.
So there are also a lot of hints that have been put out, as you say, in New Zealand about preparing for, you know, earthquakes. So look up those things like... Yes. You know, keeping things attached to the walls. What is it, drop? There's a whole thing about, you know, and they do it in kids at school, get supposed to get underneath the desk.
Yes.
Well, I've always thought, yeah. Was it, what? It's drop, cover, hold.
And hold, that's right.
So there's things like if it's going to be a long one and you can't get out, my thing is get out as quick as you can. But the reality is often you can't get out. So try and get under a safe thing.
One of the things about the earthquake in Christchurch taught us was that people running out of buildings got, because of those big, the tall, they got squashed by the facades coming down.
The facades
down.
Coming, the bricks and stuff.
It was terribly, terribly tragic, and it was, but then buildings pancaked as well, so, you know, it's just, that was horrendous. What did we learn about that one?
It's building.
Some people did get out. The Christchurch Cathedral, people ran out of.
Yes.
Mostly they were tourists, and when that collapsed, the people who went in to dig it out were terrified that there were going to be lots and lots of bodies in there. They didn't find a single one because everybody had left.
Yes.
So that was quite a good building to get out.
We're probably starting to run over, but at the church at St. Mark's, they do have an earthquake emergency thing. It's how to get everyone out quickly.
That's a wooden building.
It's a wooden building, but a lot of elderly people. And that's another thing you've got to recognise is speed. You know, not everyone's going to be thinking. But I'm going to stop us now because we're going to carry on for months talking about these things. And what we're doing here is not to frighten people, it's to think about these things.
It's getting more of the 80% into the 10%.
Yeah.
It's you know,
the survivor. Not the panic ones.
Not the panic ones.
The survivors.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah.
Anna Marie, thank you yet again. I love these programs. I learned something every day.
Oh, good.
I thank you.
Thank you for having me.